Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie. Yesterday I mentioned, again, it was a bizarre side track we were on talking about in Rodenda, that this weekend is the actual 105th anniversary, the calendar, the exact 105th anniversary of the Easter Rising, 24th of April, and the 54 women, 45 were over 16, 9 were under 16, the 54 women who were killed in the Easter Rising not only have never been memorialised, but they've mostly been forgotten. The only place their names are memorialised, the 9 children are in the Children's Park beside St. Audience in Christchurch in Dublin. That's all the 45 children are remembered there. Their names are engraved on individual stones. And the only place the women are remembered is on the wall in Glasnevin, the memorial wall in Glasnevin, which has been defaced so many times at this rate. It's permanently covered, I think, and it looks like it's covered in black plastic for the last year or so, because people would throw paint on it, because British soldiers who were killed in 1916 were also on that list. Now, Barry Kelly is on. Barry, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe? Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Do you remember where you were on July 24th, 1976?
I remember it as though it was yesterday.
Tell us.
Myself, my buddy Pierre Doyle and Joe Gallagher were milking cows at the back of the Sunshine Home in Leopardstown.
Okay.
It's now the Laurel Inn. But we were down in the far corner, just there's a shed. Behind the shed is a little wall in Leopardstown, the stands, you know, for the race course.
Okay, the race course, yeah.
So we were milking the cows anyway, and next of all, we heard this immersive bang, and we thought, Jesus, what's that happening?
Mm-hmm.
So two of us jumped onto the wall, Pierre and myself, and we were looking to see if the stand had been collapsed or blown up or what, you know, the race course.
Yeah.
So everything seemed to be looking okay. So as per normal, we finished milking the cows by hand back then. Finished anyway, put the milk into the churns, and away we went back to Roachstown Avenue with Joe Gallagher, and there was no radios in the car then. So back to the farm anyway, and put the milk into the fridge. That was the bath of water to keep it cool.
Okay.
So long story short is, we in for the breakfast and turned on the radio, and we discovered what happened was that poor chap, Biggs, the British ambassador, he was actually blown up on Murphy's Town Road.
Along with a civil
along with that poor girl, yes, exactly.
26 years of age, Judith Cook.
Unbelievable.
Now, did you go over to the site of the explosion, Barry, at any stage?
Yes, of course, sir. Because only up the road, we lived in Sandyknockin, but it was only up the road from where we were always up around Leopardstown and Sandy Ford. But there was a big crater there, about 100 foot by 50 foot,
mm-hmm.
in the road. It was there for about 20 years, to be honest. All she done was filled in the gap and put the tarmac at him on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was only talking to my buddy Jerry Bulger. He worked next door to Glen Cairn House. He worked in Glen Cairn Racing Stables.
Okay.
And he was telling me not 10 minutes ago that he remembers the same thing. He was in the stables and they were just back from the first ride out. And Seamus McGrath shouted it to everybody. Everybody take cover. It's just somebody throwing stones.
Yeah.
And of course, that was the explosion, and
the aftermath.
I could say that the poor chap who got killed, as I say.
And as I said, caller, it's on pursuant to an article in the Irish Times about the underrepresentation of females in Irish public statues, and the our caller pointed out that Judith Cook, who was a civil servant, 26 years of age, who was murdered by the IRA because she was in the car with the British ambassador in Glencairn near Sandyford in Dublin, that she's not remembered. He has a, and in fairness, there is a Ewart Biggs Memorial Prize, but Judith Cook, and somebody said she's the only civil servant to be killed in the Troubles in the course of her work. She was from England, educated at Cambridge, supposed to be very extraordinarily bright. That's why she went to work at the British Embassy in Dublin. Now, they said, do you know where that spot is now, Barry? Is it under an apartment block or is it under a road?
No, the road is still there.
Okay.
But there's just houses on either side, on one side of it. It's just grass on the other. Like, everywhere, it's all houses up there now. It was all farmland at the time. There's literally no houses back then.
I know that. And the Lewis line is there, apparently.
The Lewis line is, it's probably about 800 metres away, 600 metres away from Murphystown Road.
Okay.
It goes up the Ballyogan Road, it goes.
Okay, Ballyogan Road. Now, Barry, do you think there should be a plaque there to mark?
Of course there should. Absolutely. Some sort of memorial to the poor girl.
But Barry, I come back to, people might be wondering why he was making the point about the memorial wall and the women killed and the civilian. There was no coming on, thankfully, killed in 1916, but there was 54 women killed, mainly living in the tenements in the centre of Dublin. But The reason that I mentioned the memorial wall is, if the memorial wall, which is the name of soldiers who were in the British uniform, which was the only soldier's uniform you could actually enlist in, because we were part of the British Empire, and a lot of them were Irish, as you know, if their names are persistently being daubed on the by the way, they're part of 500-600 names on it. And the wall is permanently defaced at this stage. What hope has a plaque with Christopher Ewart Biggs' names on it, a name on it, British ambassador, and Judith Cook, who's completely forgotten, like the children in the Mountbatten assassination, Nicholas Knatchbull and Paul Maxwell, they're always seldom mentioned by name when we're talking about that atrocity. But the chances of a plaque surviving are very slim, Barry, if you don't mind me being blunt, looking at what happened.
Sure. Like, I think people get more sense now. I know it's like, I always say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But nobody has even tried to put up anything for that poor girl. Like,
okay.
She's like you and I. She went out to work one morning.
Yeah.
And didn't come back.
And it was 35, it's 35 years ago in 12 weeks, is the anniversary of the 24th of July. And Barry, has there ever been a campaign to get a memorial erected out there?
No, as far as I know, everyone just wants to try and forget about it because it was a bad thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and no one was ever caught for it. Stay with us, Barry, because Shay Connolly is another person he wants memorialised. Go ahead, Shay.
How are you doing, Joe?
Good, yeah.
Come here. To me, anyway, it's an incredible story, but we're down here in Ringsend. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Porrig O'Rourke wrote a book about the war, the truce, and the last days of the War of Independence.
Okay.
And in it, he documented about a lady called Margaret Keogh.
Okay.
Who was shot the night before the truce in Stella Gardens in Ringsend.
Okay.
She answered a knock on our door. She went out and there was nobody there. And as she was turning, she was shot. And she was taken to Patrick Dunn's and she was interviewed and everything. And she told that she heard a knock on the door. She got up down to the door and exactly as I said there, what happened. And
but Shay, what year was this? Was this the Civil War or the War of Independence?
War of Independence. So she the truce came the following day. She was shot on the night of the 10th of July.
Uh-huh.
The truce was on the 11th and she died, unfortunately, on the 12th.
Okay.
And on our funeral, the British soldiers came out of the barracks because the truce was in place.
Uh-huh.
They came out of the barracks in Beggar's Bush and they saluted her. And there was 2,000 on our funeral.
Wow.
And her father put up a 1-foot heading on her grave in Glasnevin. And she was completely written out. Nobody ever heard of her around here or anything like that until Porrig O'Rourke revealed all.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you call it? We set up a Margaret Keogh committee here in Ringsend.
Okay.
And we got a plaque erected, or sorry, a gravestone erected to her last year.
Mm-hmm.
by the National Graves Association. And we this year we've just got permission from Dublin City Council to erect a plaque on the Dodder Wall,
okay,
just opposite our home in Stella Gardens. So, you know, it was just amazing. Like that, she was the first woman to die in 1916 was a lady called Margaret Keogh, the nurse on O'Connell Street. And the last person to was a woman. And the last person to die was also a woman, also named Margaret Keogh, no relation. And she was written out of history.
And there was other people killed in the Rings End. To go back to 1916, Margaret Naylor was killed on the last day of the Rising at the, on the bridge in Ringsend there.
That's right, yeah.
And bizarrely, now she's now in a grave with her husband, John Naylor, up in Grange Gorman Cemetery in Dublin. But bizarrely, on the day she was killed in the Easter Rising, which her anniversary is next Saturday week, her husband, John Naylor, was killed on the Western Front.
That's right.
So awful, awful story. So where are you with this plaque? Are we nearly there? Or?
Yeah. Well, Margaret Keogh was a member of Cumann na mBan.
Okay.
And she was a member of Cumann na Gaeilge. She was a member of the trade union and a member of the GEA. And she was only 21. And she was a formidable woman in the area at the time. And she had been arrested twice by the Crown Forces, and she spoke of Gaeilge to them. And they were doing a raid that night in Stella Gardens and Ringsend.
Okay.
And it's perceived that she was shot by British troops the night before the truce that they were out to get some people that were on there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the fact that she was... that nobody ever heard anything about her. And now I know the Civil War came after that and people may have kept their heads down and all that. But we can't help but think, you know, that, you know, they were purposely written out.
Are there any memorials in... isn't there a memorial in Ringsend to the youngest, or one of the youngest soldiers killed in World War One? I could be wrong now. I thought it was a campaign, and I know there's a memorial to sailors, merchant.
There is on that. Well, just on Ringsend, you're talking about women. We're also looking to get a bustone of Nora Barnacle.
Okay.
Because Nora Barnacle first met James Joyce in Ringsend Park. And there's a huge quietness surrounds what's happened. It's in the book Ulysses, you know, and their letters recounting that their first meeting in Ringsend Park. And she was also a formidable woman who stood by Joyce the whole time.
Absolutely, and a lot of Ulysses is set around that part of the country over towards the South Wall and Sandy Mount on the beach. I know a lot of Dublin features.
So we want to get a bust in Ringsend. We want to get some of the footfall that comes over here from across the world and visit. Because one of the... I've researched it myself, and the most talked about thing is what happened in Ringsend Park with James Joyce and Nora Barnacle.
Good point.
So we want to get a bit of footfall. But her anniversary, Joe, this year is actually on the 11th of June, back to Margaret Keogh. On the 11th, and we have we're putting in place a commemoration. Of course, COVID restrictions and all.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The best we can do to commemorate the 100th anniversary of our death.
Okay.
And it's only fitting and warranted.
And Shay, would you have just from your work on that? Would you have a view, given that it's the 45th anniversary of the deaths of Christopher Ewart Biggs and Judith Cook, aged 26, and Barry's. Call Barry Kelly, who lives out around Glencairn and remembers the day. He said there should be some plaque in the public area to those two people who were killed in 76.
I heard what your conversation there. So I think there's a big difference between British soldiers and the defacing of the Glasnevin thing. And like these were two different people. Look, we're coming out of it. Our history is tortured, and how we celebrate it, and it has to be sensitive at all. I don't think a plaque to those two people will be defaced up there. I think it's different than people wearing military uniform. So we have to be very sensitive, but our history is tortured and how we celebrate it is always emotional.
Yeah, that's a fabulous way of phrasing it, Shay. Our history is tortured. Yeah, it sure is, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. And please God, we're...
Now, is it a big process to get a plaque erected? Obviously, you have to get it designed and sculpted and in terms of permission and the actual procedure of erecting it and how it goes on the wall.
We applied to Dublin City Council. I got all the councillors and the TDs in the area, cross party. They all supported it. And our last meeting there was on the 23rd of March. Councillor Micheál McDonagh is the chair of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was seeing him at Dublin City Council on it as well. And I just got news the following day that it was passed unanimously.
Okay.
So, I did have to do a bit of research, and the Margaret Keogh Committee, Matt Ward and Mick Bean and all them guys down here, they had done massive research on it. As it turned out, one of our grandnephews lived here and he didn't know anything about it. He was originally from Finglas, married a girl down here. I wrote a song about it, put it up on YouTube. He heard the song, brought it out to his mother in Finglas, and his mother said, "That's my auntie."
Wow.
He's singing about it.
And whereabouts is the plaque going to, I hope?
Anyone that goes to the Viva Stadium, the Dotto Walkway down there.
Yeah, beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just on the wall there, that new wall that was put up for the time the Dotto flooded.
That's right, okay. And yeah. I know it'll be remembered, but she is on the wall in Glasnevin. In 1916, there was an 11-year-old girl, Bridget Stewart, from Pembroke Cottages there near Herbert Park, and she was making her way down the Dotto with her sister to bring her father his lunch. He worked in the Pigeon House at the time.
She
was killed on the Dotto walk as well. Okay, Shay, let us know when that unveiling is happening and we can give it a mention.
I think she deserves it, yeah, John. Okay. Thanks for taking me, Paul.
Okay, Barry, you've well, that's Shay saying he doesn't think it would be defaced.
I don't think it would be defaced because it's not as though it's in a corner street. Not too many people walking around there, and they're all residents, so.
Yeah, but remember Glasnevin, they broke into Glasnevin. They climbed over the 12-foot railings to get in with cans of paint on about 24 different occasions.
I'd be thinking it's probably too far away for the Yahoos to come out.
Yeah, okay. Well.
There's a lovely memorial there for the 1916 there at Newlands Cross.
Okay.
It's absolutely fantastic.
But as I think Shay put it well, but the fact of the matter is that our history is tortured. And
yeah, but these weren't, it's not as though they were soldiers or something. They were just normal, everyday civil servants.
Okay.
Plus, he was only a young man, only married in the had been only married recently, and he'd only started the job in less. I think he was there less than a year.
And he was. He wrote about being a pacifist. But remember, the IRA justification for killing him, and they've never apologised. They stand over it, I presume.
Yeah, you know the IRA say, "Burn everything except for the coal."
Yeah, but we'll check with Dunleary Rathdown. Has there ever been a proposal for? From any councillor or whatever, for a memorial to Judith Cook, 26 years of age, and Christopher Ewart Biggs. Okay, Barry, thanks indeed. Stay safe, Barry. That's Barry Kelly. Tommy Claffey. Tommy.
How's it going, Joe?
Yeah, go ahead.
Joe, I'd like to propose that Dublin City Council erects a statue to Imelda May and the Liberties.
Hang on, Tommy. Now, you're demeaning the conversation. Not with Imelda, but Imelda's alive and well and hale and hearty and bright and bubbly and gorgeous and talented and creative, and her new album's just out.
Yeah.
Heard it being reviewed on Arena the other night. You don't...
Boy, you don't have to put a statue to someone that's alive. You have to wait till they're dead.
Yes.
No, Joe, I don't agree with you. Put
forward your case then before.
I seen a post that she had on Instagram and Facebook. Somebody told her in the industry that a woman of 40 was wasting her time because nobody in the industry would buy her records. That's ridiculous. People at Liberty don't give up.
Tommy, we're talking about statues.
Yeah. And why couldn't you put up a statue to Imelda May?
Because she's not dead, thank God.
No, you don't have to be dead to put up some sort of acknowledgement to her.
Well, do you know,
our album 11 Past the Hour came out this week.
That's right. Well, it's great.
And if she has enough downstreams and people to buy the record before tomorrow morning, she can show these so-called ones that told her after 40 years of age.
I never knew 40 was a cut-off point for talent. Yeah, but anyway, it's not.
But if people go out and buy the album, it'll reach number one and it'll be a kick in the teeth.
Have you ever met Imelda, Tommy?
I did.
Yeah. So anyway.
I met her up at the cemetery. And when she was in a rockabilly era. But I bought the CD. It arrived, funny enough, it arrived at 11 past the hour this morning.
Okay, well, that's serendipity. That's a message.
Yeah, well, I hope it's a good sign for
that's a message.
I'm calling all the people, Joe. Hold on. I'm calling all the people at Dublin and Ireland to get behind one of the fantastic, one of the most brilliant singers that Ireland has produced.
Okay. And let someone
say to her, she's wasting her time at 40 because no one will buy the album. Well, the people of Ireland can show their support by downloading the album and get her up to number one.
And do you know a lot about Imelda May?
Well, I know I know she's from around Mead Street.
Now, just hang on a sec, Tommy. If you do know a lot about Imelda May, tell me what statue was already outside where she was born in the Liberties.
There's one in the middle of the road.
Oh, well done, yeah. Straight to the top of the class. Yeah. It was erected in 1929, and it's a statue. It's a religious statue. It's in a grotto in the middle of a roundabout, so to speak. Well, isn't that right opposite where Imelda's parents were from? Or they still are. Thankfully. Okay. While I have you there, Tommy, what do you think of the proposal, which is Barry Kelly's campaign? The first caller, he wants 45 years ago in July, a young woman, Judith Cook, long forgotten, seldom mentioned, 26 years of age, doing her job, and Ewart Biggs, who was a British ambassador, they were blown up on a summer's day, and he wants a plaque. And I think, judging what's happened to the wall in Glasnevin, which is completely out of commission now for well over a year, I think it will be defaced. What do you think?
Well, I didn't hear the start of the program, Joe, so I'm not able to give you any comments because I don't know the girl, but I wouldn't have a view either way.
Okay. Tommy, you what's business like up at the cemetery?
Quiet. But now that I have a Melda's May album, I'll be blasting her out. Dance with me, darling.
Okay. I thought the cemetery was very busy, Tommy. People are dying to get into it.
I'll tell you another thing. RTE wants to look at. She's doing a chat show, and it was the most relaxing chat show.
Yeah, that was lovely. Yeah.
It was like she was in your living room.
But was there an odd, Tommy, remind me of the Imelda May show. Was there an audience there? You see, there's a problem now.
We're doing a show every week.
Yeah, but there's no audience. There. That's true. That's true. Okay.
We're getting reruns of Daniel O'Donnell Fizzing, B&B. How many times do we have to have reruns and reruns?
Okay.
Get something new in.
Okay, Tommy Claffey, thanks indeed. 51551, Marchand.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at RT.ie. Again, Gardaí in Blessington and Balton Glass are looking for witnesses. It was last Saturday week, around midday, as you know, the man who was on this programme was on his bicycle up in the Wicklow Gap, and he was a white car, came up from behind at speed. A man was sitting on the, basically sitting out the passenger window, and he pushed John into a ditch, and John obviously went head over heels. And luckily enough, as he said himself, he's lucky he wasn't killed. And they filmed it as well. But Gardaí are still looking for anyone who was on that road, anyone who has dash cam footage. Lots of people on Twitter, from the little bit that we were allowed under GDPR, that we were allowed to publish, people have actually identified the car, the make of the car, which is incredible, from the dashboard and the sunroof. Apparently it's a Volkswagen Passat of a particular year. But if anyone has any dash cam, the Gardaí in Blessington and Baltinglass are taking it very, very seriously indeed. Now, Marion, I'm unfamiliar with this, but go ahead, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Joe, I was just very disappointed the other night looking at Euronews. A little.
Lidl,
we're having a promotion for young ladies in Ireland to give them free sanitary wear.
Okay.
And I just thought, would they do this promotion in Germany, say, or Poland, or any other country that they trade in? You know, we're not a third world country, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And why would they promote, especially in the Euro news, and all the serious things that's going on, they'd be aware, saying that they were giving free sanitary towels to Irish young ladies.
Well, Irish women of any age.
Lidl,
it's only... You're right, it's only happening in Lidl, Ireland.
And yes, very annoying and very disappointing.
Okay, well, I'll ask you to expand in a sec. But Lidl Ireland is set to become, this is their press statement, is set to become the first major retailer in the world to offer free period products in stores nationwide to women and girls across the country affected by period poverty, in partnership with Homeless Period Ireland and the Simon Communities of Ireland. Now, what you have to do is you download the app, the Lidl app. So that means you need a smartphone. So that's a bit of a... Not everyone has a smartphone. You download the app and then
they're very smart. They're well able to do it.
Okay. And then you present the app in the store, and you every month you get a free box of sanitary pads or tampons. Now, and they're also giving... product making donation to the Simon Community. Now, what is wrong with... I know that. Well, what is wrong with it?
Well, what is wrong with it is if we're doing this in their own in Germany and all the other countries, well, why single out Ireland and our women? I mean, you had a program there about women. You know what I mean? We seem to be a downward trough. Irish women are always being downgraded. We're well able to look after our own.
What I heard you saying earlier was that if I'm expanding on, if Lidl have money to give free, obviously it costs them to give free sanitary pads and tampons, you're saying they should use that money to give them away in third world countries.
Oh yeah, well I would, of course. I mean, there's hundreds of women in other countries are really in need.
Okay.
Us Irish ladies and young girls do not need a little to be promoting, especially when you hear it on Euronews, but not on our own Irish papers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really annoys you and shocks you. But when it's all over Europe, they'll think, what are we like? You know, can we not look after our own hygiene? Which is ridiculous. Now, I don't mind charity or anyone helping out. That's no problem. But why don't they then just hand out every month, maybe if you went into the shop, give you a nice little gift? Maybe that would be perfectly fine. But
well, you see, in there... In one sense, I'm glad you're mentioning this because you're publicising it, because... They say in their press release, and by the way, is it, you, many stores do Lidl have in the world? Do you know, Marion?
Well, there you go.
They've nearly 11,500 stores, one opening every single day in 29 countries, and they've 168 stores in the Republic, which might surprise people as well. They're nearly opening one a day here as well. Okay, this is their reason for. If you download the app, the Lidl app, you are entitled to a free box of sanitary pads or tampons every month. They say a Plan International study on young females in Ireland found that almost 50% of girls aged between 12 and 19 found it difficult to pay for sanitary products. Lidl's new initiative comes in advance of anticipated Irish legislation and implementation of supporting measures. In November last, Scotland became the first country in the world to commit to offering free period products to those who need them, with New Zealand quickly following suit following successful trials in schools last year. And then they go on to point out, we also support Ladies Gaelic Football Association, so they say they have a track record in supporting women. But you're saying they should use the money in another country.
Well, they should use the money in promoting good health, maybe good hygiene, and naturally to give it to the countries that really need it. Mm. You know, we don't, our young girls have very good parents, thank God. Most of us are very well looked after and have all we need. Where, as I said, you don't mind an odd gift going into the shop, but to publicise specifically, all I heard on the Euro news was Ireland. They didn't say Poland or Russia or Germany.
But you're saying that people see that across Europe and think, oh, Ireland must be a very poor country. There's another but Marion, people could also see that and say, oh, Ireland is a very progressive country. They've actually, some campaigning group in Ireland, which is what happened here, has successfully convinced a major supermarket chain to tackle period poverty and to give out free sanitary pads or tampons. So could that be seen as progressive?
I don't think so. Not in my eyes, anyway. It's just, to me, it's, you know, it's a, you know, small country, I know.
So you're not, you're okay.
You know, we're only a tiny country in Europe. But, you know, we still can look after our own hygiene. We don't need giving out our promotion. And, I mean, it's only a promotion too, really. But if you really need things like that, yes, there is organisations you can go. Naturally, there's none of us are millionaires, as they say in goes. We're all struggling, especially at the moment. But I just saw on the Euro news, singling out Ireland specifically. They didn't say Europe, or they didn't say, you know, all Europe. They said Ireland, and I just saw, you know, it just brought me down. It really brought me down to think that, you know, they're putting this all over the world, that we can't afford to look after our young ladies. That's all I want to say, Joe.
Okay, say that, Marion, because Anne Barry, Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good afternoon.
Marion said she was embarrassed seeing Ireland advertised in this way. Your reaction, please.
My reaction is quite the opposite. I think we should be absolutely applauded for what we have done. Mm-hmm. It is an issue. It has been an issue. We have done surveys here. The amount of time young girls have missed from school because they haven't got the product.
Yeah.
The amount of young girls that have been caught shoplifting because they couldn't afford the product. It's an absolute necessity, and wiping it under the carpet and turning around saying it doesn't exist has done no favours to these young girls. And I think that we should be applauded, and I think the fact that we're on the world stage is only saying again that Ireland is a very social, compassionate country and that we are looking after what is an issue that hasn't been attended to before.
And do you know who persuaded Lidl to do this in Ireland?
I have no idea. Okay. I really am.
But whoever did, you're applauding them.
I'm applauding them. I was a mother of three children, so, you know, three girls.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We all know what it's like. Can you imagine the distress that young girls have when they haven't got these products? And it's, you know, we're only coming out of an age where one could speak about sanitary products to begin with.
Crazy.
But
Anne, what about Marion's point, and that is that the money that Lidl are spending on this. Now, as it happens, a packet of tampons, you can get two for six. That's what, 36 for £6, €6 in. But €6 is €6. I take your point in Lidl. But Marion is saying the money that they're spending in Ireland on this, she said, she at one stage calls it a gimmick for free publicity. They should spend in, say, a third world country that might be in greater need, young women.
I'm not getting into the marketing debate, okay? I'm only just delighted that it's happening,
okay.
That it is an issue. People did attempt before, chemists did attempt to put baskets inside the door to provide these products free. It didn't succeed. Mm. So, you know, just on a humanitarian and an Irish level, I think we're way ahead of the pack.
And what about that? It's only if you have a smartphone, Anne. Obviously, that'd be younger. Well, lots of people have smartphones, but generally.
Again, not getting into the marketing point. That was some young executive thinking up an idea of this is the way teenagers communicate with each other. Obviously, there can be another way it can be done to facilitate young people who haven't got these devices. I think it was trying to give dignity to the consumer who would be availing of the products.
So you download the Lidl app and you sign up, you have to sign up to it, and you receive a free monthly coupon. And it's ongoing, so I don't know if it's time limited, is it in perpetuity? Let me bring in Niamh, Joe at rt.ie, 51551, one more chance, Niamh.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
You're listening to Marion. Now, Marion's making a number of points, by the way. The fact that it's advertised all over Europe and it makes Ireland, she feels, look that we're very poor, that it's a publicity gimmick, and three, that the money that Lidl have stores in 29 countries, 11,500 stores. The only country they're doing this in is Ireland. Why don't you do it in a country that's in greater need? Your point, please, Niamh.
Well, I just think it's very progressive on Lidl's part. I mean, there's so many young women and older women who need those products. You don't know what their circumstances are, what reason they might actually need to avail of the service. Mm-hmm. So I think, well done, Lidl. And the fact that somebody's embarrassed that other countries are looking at us thinking that we're poor because of this, I just think that's a very antiquated notion, kind of harken back to, oh God, don't do that in case the neighbours think it's the wrong thing, you know. It's, I think, well done, Lidl.
Marion, what do you think of that point? That is progressive. Marion,
I do agree that, you know, I mean, it'd be great if all young girls, maybe in the schools, they could, you know, give products in schools and in shops. Hand them out for young ladies.
But
you have to
become a Lidl
member. But you see, that's the point. You have to become a Lidl shopper. You have to go in and shop in their kind of shop and do, you know, because when you go in, naturally you're going to buy other products.
The advertising of it. If Lidl Ireland said, we're going to give out a voucher every month for 2 litres of milk and a box of, so 2 litres of milk and a kilo of porridge. Would you object to that? Do you think people would be saying, God, they must be a very poor country. They have to get milk and
porridge.
What I'm trying to find out, is it a tampons you're objecting to, or the fact that they're using this as a gimmick in a country that doesn't need it when they operate in other countries that could probably benefit more?
Yeah, it was just a point that the Irish young ladies, they didn't say European young ladies or what you call it, German young ladies, they said Irish young ladies that can't afford sanitary products. You know, I just thought they could have worded it better. They could
let me put that to Niamh and Anne. Niamh first. Niamh, the fact that you have to have a smartphone, the fact that you have to sign up for their app, the fact that you have to get a voucher, the fact that you have to go into the store, does that turn it into a marketing gimmick?
Oh, I'm sure it is a marketing gimmick. I don't think big corporations do these days doesn't have kind of marketing at the heart of it. But at the same time, I think it's a very welcome thing. I think there are definitely many people in the country, many young women, who would need tampons and sanitary products every month, and they will absolutely welcome this. And I haven't seen the actual details, so I don't know if there's a stipulation that you have to buy something else, but I would imagine if you don't have to buy anything else, if money is tight, you're not going to buy anything else.
Okay, I take that point. And by the way, a caller has pointed out that in the UK, Morrisons, which is a major supermarket chain, Morrisons in the UK have a better system. You go to the customer service desk and you ask for a package from Sandy, and a customer care rep will hand you a packet of tampons or sanitary pads discreetly. Does that make a difference? You don't have to see, you can walk in off the street, don't have to buy a packet of anything and just walk up to the customer service desk, because you have to be a woman, obviously, and say,
And you could send your fella for them if you really were in need. Especially after having children and all the rest, you're not running out to the shop. So naturally, an odd husband or an odd boyfriend would run in and get them.
Okay.
But that might be a better idea, Joe, all right.
You don't need an app, you just go in.
You
go up and say,
what
do you say? Can I have a package from Sandy? What about another? Niamh and Anne Barry, I put this to you because Anne Marion suggested it. Why not Lidl simply donate the products to primary and secondary schools?
Something like that.
But that means you wouldn't have to go into Lidl and you wouldn't have to download the app. Joe at RT.ie. Linda O'Leydon. Linda, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. I can understand them saying, you know, you have to download an app. Most homeless people need a phone to get a bed for the night.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have this thing that, they're homeless, they're not entitled to anything. But young people, homeless people, so many homeless charities have to make up packs of personal products for women every month.
I know that. I take that point very strongly. Okay, and apparently there is an organisation called Homeless Period in Ireland, and they're the ones who, and a lot of people are praising them here, who pushed, I presume they tried every major outlet, but that they managed to push Lidl into doing this. Okay, Linda, Marion, Anne Barry and Niamh, go to Míle Ó Maith, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Okay, and Joe at RT.ie. And remember, people are asking us what Garda station to contact. Apparently it's Blessington Garda station. Sorry, I said Baltinglass earlier on. It's Blessington Garda station. If you have any information on that savage attack on John, he originally gave out his full name for obvious reasons, because the attackers posted a video, or we got a video from someone in some group, a WhatsApp group, which was the attackers filming the attack on John. Now, Karen, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
This issue was raised very strongly on Morning Ireland with Audrey two mornings ago, and two very brave women talking about stalking, and stalking in itself should be a crime. It's not at the moment. It falls under different. You have to get it almost into a different category for a prosecution.
Yes.
Your horrific experience, Karen.
Yes, it's a few years ago, but I was in a relationship with a man, and I got engaged to him.
Right.
And I broke off the relationship 6 months later because he wasn't treating me right. He was very controlling and aggressive and difficult in lots of different ways. So I said, no, I didn't want to marry him.
Okay.
And after that, things got really, really serious and dangerous for me. And he would not leave me alone. Mm-hmm. He would park outside my house late at night, and early in the morning, he'd still be there. He would follow me to work, no matter where I was working. He'd sit outside all day.
Mm-hmm.
He came down to my parents' house, caused a terrible scene. He came into where I was living at the time. He came into the house one night and started to demand money from me.
Wow.
And I said to him, you know, I don't owe you anything. We didn't have joint bank accounts. We didn't have any joint business, so I don't owe you any money. And he kept insisting that he wanted money. And I said to him, what money do you want? I just said, I just can't stand this. What money do you want?
Okay.
And he said that while we were going out together, he had spent money on me every time we went to the cinema or went for a meal or a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And he had kept a record of all the money he had spent. Now he had no return on his money and he was going to get his money back out of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you mentioned, how did he get into your house?
The front door was closed and I hadn't actually locked it. And he just came up to the door, opened the door, walked straight into the house, through the house to where I was standing, and started shouting at me and demanding money.
Yeah. And did he contact your family, your family?
Oh, he did, yes. He told them to tell me to go back to him.
Wow.
And they contacted him and told him this wasn't good enough and that they wouldn't accept this behaviour and to leave me alone, that I've... They said, you know, Karen makes her own decisions and this is her decision and that's it. You're going to have to live with it. It went on and on and on. It went on for over 2 years.
Okay.
And I contacted the Gardaí and told them what was happening. There was a sergeant who was very good and quite sympathetic. But whenever something would happen or I would go down to the Garda station and say, I want this recorded, that he's been to my house or he's done this or he's done that.
Yeah.
And some of the Gardaí were good and would record it in the log. And others would say, but sure, what are you talking about? Or he hasn't done anything. Or And it was very difficult until things really escalated. And one day he followed me from work and he drove me off the road.
Wow.
Into the ditch.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was afraid for my life at the time. I knew, you know, he was capable and things were getting worse and worse. And I went to the Garda station and I told them what had happened and it was a Thursday and they agreed they'd take a statement from me on the Saturday. And when I went into the Garda station on the Saturday, I had kept, I'm very meticulous about what I do and I had kept a log of every incident
well
of every
done.
Time
well
I had
done.
Seen him and any,
well
anything
done.
That had happened over the 2 years.
Well done, 2 years.
And I had 500, more than 500
wow.
incidents over 2 years.
Wow.
Well, what I want to get at, Joe,
that's
for anybody
every,
who's out there listening
this,
to
that's
this...
That's one nearly every two and a half, 3 days.
Pardon?
That's 500 incidents over...
2 years.
Over 720 days.
Yeah. He
wow.
did not let up.
And,
he was
and just the incident... Where,
and I was an absolute wretch. And I want people to realise this is a very, very serious crime. It's not to be laughed at.
Hmm.
It's not for somebody to say, oh, sure, I had a stalker or two and... People said to me, like, what did you do to him to make him do this to you? I had that said to me several times. And what I did was I stood up for myself and said, I'm not going to be bullied in a relationship and you're not going to do that to me.
Mm.
And I don't want you in my life, which I was perfectly entitled to do. But his reaction to that was, I never, ever thought I was going to have that reaction. And eventually it went to court.
Okay,
under the non-fatal offences against the Person Act, Section 10.
Which is, and because there's no crime of stalking
no crime.
As such. But just come back, Karen, 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, were you in the same job? Did you live in the same place for the 2 years?
No, I moved house 4 times and he followed me 4 times. He found
My
me
God.
4 times.
My God.
And I was in a job that I absolutely loved. I was working with small children, teaching, and I loved it and it was great and I had to leave that job. Had to leave other jobs. And I had people say to me, look, we can't have you here because, you know, you're causing trouble.
How are you causing trouble?
Yeah, because they couldn't get at him what they could get at me, so it all came back on me. And it was just dreadful, Joe.
When he ran you off the road, which is a pretty serious attempt on your life, well, tell us what happened that day. Was it morning, noon, night, where?
Don't give us the exact location. Well, it all started the night before because I'd been out with a group of friends and one of them had a brother who was home from Australia on holiday and we wanted to get taxis home in opposite directions and there was only one taxi. Okay. So he said, I'll walk down to your house with you. The others can take the taxi and send it back for me and then I'll go home. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I was obviously being watched at the time and he came back to my house. And he came in to go to the toilet because he'd had a couple of pints in this the pub.
Is this the stalker?
No, this was my friend's brother.
Okay.
And he came out of the house and the taxi pulled up and I waved him off.
Okay.
And the next day, my stalker was outside the house at 7 o'clock in the morning. And he drove off and I went into my car and I drove to work. I was working... I don't want to say where I was working
at the time.
And... He followed me around the roundabout into where I was working and I got out of the car and went into work and I came out at lunchtime. I was finished at 1:30 and when I got into my car and drove off, he was following me again.
Wow.
And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We were on quite an isolated stretch of road and he kept driving up behind me and then pulling back and driving behind me and pulling back and I didn't know what to do. I just thought I have to get out of here and get into a town or get to a Garda station. And the next thing, he drove up along beside me and cut in across me and drove me off the road.
And how did you get out of that situation?
Well, luckily, the car wasn't damaged. The engine was still running. He drove off at speed and left me where I was.
Yeah.
And I managed to kind of calm myself and I was afraid he was going to come back. So I got the car going again. And I drove into the town where I was living and went straight to the Garda station. I don't even remember how I got there, Joe. I don't remember a whole lot about it. And I got into the Garda station and I told the guard on the desk what had happened.
So you eventually got to court under, what was the charge again?
It was under the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act, Section 10.
And what was the outcome?
He was given 10 months suspended.
What did he offer a defence?
Well, what he did when the case was pending, twice the night before the case was due in court, he changed solicitor and the case had to be put back, which upset me dreadfully because he was holding all the cards and he was actually controlling the whole process with his behaviour, which I found very difficult to deal with. Very, very difficult.
And was it included in the charge sheet? Was the driving you off, forcing you off the road by forcing your vehicle off the road?
Yeah.
And he got 10 months suspended.
He got 10 months suspended. But on the day of the court, he was in court and I had members of my family with me and he tried to intimidate me in court and he told his solicitor to tell the Garda sergeant that he would pay me €2,000 for an apology.
Sorry, he would...
He would pay me €2,000 if I apologised to him.
For the
trouble I had caused.
For what?
For the trouble I had caused him.
He caused the trouble.
I know, but he would not accept
he
in
was
any
deluded.
Way,
he was
Joe,
deluded.
That
he
had
was
caused
deluded,
any
yeah.
trouble. He wasn't he was sorry. There was no remorse. He didn't accept at all that anything he had done was wrong. And that frightened me so much, Joe.
Okay.
But on several occasions, he was asked to go into the Garda station and the guard spoke to him and gave him a warning and told him to leave me alone. This was well before the court case. Mm-hmm. And he came out of the Garda station and he first thing he did was ring my mother and shout abuse down the phone at her at the trouble I was causing him.
But as you say, it's extraordinarily traumatic and worrying and then even to physically attack you in that way. Mm. Karen,
but it was just, the thing is, Joe, it's a couple of years now since it happened, but it took me years and years before I could start to live a normal life.
Yeah.
The effect of it was just terrible. And to try and have a conversation with a man, to try and, you know, pick up and start to have that side of my life again, because when you meet somebody, quite naturally they say, oh, where do you work? Or are you living such and such? Or do you know... And straight away, my back was up because I thought he's going to follow me. Mm. He's going to do something. And to actually get over that and to treat people and men again as just decent human beings was very difficult.
Okay. Well, Karen, thank you so much for speaking out and supporting, publicly supporting the campaign. That's Karen, obviously not her real name for obvious reasons. Thanks, Karen. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Florence, good afternoon.
How you doing?
When I saw your initial contact, I thought you were asking the question, should you go to Turkey for a gastric sleeve operation, which is a pretty serious operation, but you were adamant you are going.
Oh, I am going, yes. And what I want to know is, I've rang Eastern Health Board today, Jesse, Department of Health, Foreign Affairs, all the way down to the Irish Embassy. I've no issue quarantining in the hotel when I return. Hmm. It's just they are not willing to meet my dietary needs when I return.
Okay, so do you want to take me through the first part of that? Is you're travelling to Turkey next week, and who does? I don't want the name of the clinic.
No, I'm not going to mention the name. Yeah. It's a hospital in Turkey I'm travelling to. I'll be there for 4 days.
Yeah.
So I get COVID test before I leave Ireland, which I'll be getting that on Saturday. I get COVID test when I arrive in Turkey. I get a COVID test as I leave Turkey. I'm escorted from the company I'm going with. They pick me up in the airport. Hmm. They bring me to a hospital.
Yeah.
Then when I finish on the 4th of May, they bring me back to the airport from the hospital. And I'm setting my way then back to Ireland. Now, as I said, I have no issue with the quarantine. But I've been forced to do a mandatory quarantine, fill out a form. And tell the minute I send this on, I'm told I have to accept the terms and conditions, which I don't, because they're refusing to meet me dietary needs, which would be a liquid diet I have to have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've rang three of the hotels that's on the mandatory list.
Yeah.
I've rang the hotel, the main hotel, their head office, and they've told me it's up to each individual hotel to meet me needs. I've offered to park my car in the hotel before I fly, with everything I need in the boot of the car. I've offered to drop the stuff to the hotel before I go.
Okay.
Because they told me the car parks are closed, and I've been told no, because I don't know what hotel I'm going to.
And what type of diet will you be on after the gastric sleeve operation?
I have to have a lactose milk, a protein shake. I'm type 2 diabetes. The reason I'm mainly going over, it's reduced diabetes, because I will end up on insulin. If I don't do something about my weight. So I have to get a protein shake, a low-sugar one, like an Actimel-type yogurt, something with a probiotic to protect my stomach from the medication I'm going to be on, and water. That's all I'm allowed to have for 2 weeks.
Mm. And you'd be on your own in a room in a hotel?
No, my own GP is aware of the situation I'm going, so she's advised me to bring my partner, because I'm not going to be able to carry the bags. So he's actually, both of us were going to quarantine in the hotel. We've no issues with that.
Okay. So because, what's entailed in a gastric sleeve operation?
Well, 80% of my stomach is going to be cut out.
And what's
it? So it's keyhole surgery. So it'll be 80% of my stomach is going to be removed.
And what do they replace it with?
It's I'm going to have like a banana-shaped stomach. So 20% of my stomach is going to be left there.
Okay.
Now, I've went to dietary groups and I've lost 9 stone. I've went to gyms at the same time, lost 9 stone. But I cannot keep her up because my stomach is overstretched and I cannot maintain the weight off.
Yeah.
So the only way I can do it is to remove the overflow of the stomach.
But could you get that operation in Ireland, Florence?
I can, yeah, but I don't have 15 to 20,000 euro to get it done in Ireland.
Oh, wow.
It's 4 or 5 times more expensive to get it done in Ireland than there is 3,500 in Turkey to get done.
And have you
I've been saving for this the last 2 years to get done.
And have you spoken, Florence, to anyone who's had it done in Turkey?
I've, Oh, I know loads of people. I've done loads of people.
Are you serious?
Loads.
And people have known.
You'd be very, very, very surprised about the people that travel the door to get this done.
And what else did they
travel? I'm on a Pacific group that there's more than 10,000 people on this group between Ireland and England that have got this done.
Wow.
The outcome is amazing from it. And they're probably more experienced because they do it often.
And what's the follow-up?
The follow-up is, now, my GP has its, because of her duty of care, she's willing to take care of me when I come home. But if I can get over, I have 2 years to go over to Turkey, when I can get over again, and they'll do every test possible under the sun for me. Now, the pre-op test I get done is second to none. It's brilliant. You get, ECGs, blood tests. Hmm. You get a camera down. Like, before they even attempt to do the surgery, you get pre-test.
But, Florence, it is...
Same way you would here.
Yeah, but it is an operation. It is a general anaesthetic. Is it a general anaesthetic?
It is.
Which in itself is a risk.
It is.
Are you not worried about...
I'm not. As I said to my doctor, I says, I can either take a massive heart attack in Ireland and die, or I can take a massive heart attack and die on the table in Turkey. Either way, if I don't lose the weight, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
My own GP, she does agree with the surgery. She says, I need to do something. I do need to do something.
Okay. You're at your wit's end, isn't that? That's what you're saying.
All I want to know is my dietary needs, will they be met when I come home? That's all I want to know. I understand, I actually agree with that quarantine, I've no issues whatsoever doing it. I've also told them I need 45 minutes exercise to the Department of Health.
Yeah.
And they've told me they'd be only willing to give me 15 minutes. Now, I could end up with a gastric pain, built up a gas, which I could be in extreme pain. So I'll probably end up hospitalised. Because I won't get the exercise. You have to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Turkey now, we're made walk. We're not allowed just to sit in the bed. You have to walk for those couple of days that we're there.
There's a long statement in from the HSE, but the top line is the TIFCO Hotel Group have designed menus with dietary requirements in mind.
Yeah, but they're not catered for mine. Now, if you are...
But yours is... would it be fair to say, Florence, yours is a fairly... cheap dietary requirement.
Yes, it would be, yeah. Well, it's probably about €20 to buy a bag of protein. Like, where they're going to be given fries. I can't have, somebody sent a photograph that they got a fry, they got muffins, she's got what I got, she's getting what I got done, that's what they sent her up.
And you're saying that's the food that would make you...
I wouldn't be able to touch that.
Are you saying that's the food that has you where you are in that sense?
Well, that is the food that would have me the way I am as well. But after surgery, I wouldn't be able to touch that.
I know. And could you delay the surgery, Florence?
For my own health and my own risk, no.
Okay.
If I don't do this now, something else is going to get into my way. And it's just, I've been 2 years I've been thinking of getting this done. I've been saving the money to get this done. I have the money ready. Now, when the 2,500 came into effect for me and my partner to quarantine, I borrowed the money to get that done, to quarantine. I've no issues quarantining.
Yeah.
I've no issues being took off a plane and brought down to a holding room and being escorted by the army into a bus and brought to God knows where.
Well, most people seem to be brought to. I know one of our callers last
week.
Well,
the hotel told me they cannot guarantee where I'd be brought due to the capacity.
Capacity issues, yeah.
Yeah.
And have you spoken to anyone who's had this operation?
Yes, I've spoken to loads. I've friends, I've family that's got it done. My friends have got it done. I have people that live in where I live have it done. Girls I walk with have got it done. All in the same place.
Yeah.
Loads of people I know have got done, and the outcomes are just amazing.
Mm.
Like, they go on in this country about people being overweight and obesity problems, and when I'm trying to cure mine, I'm being...
And have you attended the clinic in Loughlinstown, run by Donald?
I have never been offered that. Okay. I'm a diabetic and overweight. I've been diabetic since I was 40. I'm 48 years of age now.
Okay.
I've been overweight all my life and I've never been offered that.
Okay. Apparently, now, the four
I feel
hotel.
Like I've been, I feel like I've been discriminated as well because I haven't refused to take my vaccine. I would have took my vaccine. I work in retail. I've been spit at, kicked, shouted at, you name it, I've been got. I've been abused left, right, and centre for the whole time I've been in retail. And still, I wasn't offered any vaccine. So I feel the likes of us that haven't got it are being discriminated because obviously you're allowed, you don't have to quarantine if you don't have, if you have a vaccine.
Yeah, and when you say don't, I don't want to know your weight, but tell me.
Oh, I've no problem.
I don't. In Florence, and you mentioned you're going for the glassy tea because you feel you are, well, you are overweight.
Well, it's not feel. I know.
But
yeah,
are you ever abused in your work because of your weight?
Oh, not because of weight. No, because of the retail position. No.
Okay, I understand. We've had people on who were, especially in the pandemic.
I've never had that.
The four hotels are the Crown Plaza in Santry, the Holiday Inn in Santry, Clontarf Castle, the Hard Rock.
No, the only one I didn't contact was the one, the Haircore.
The Hard Rock.
The only one I didn't contact. I contacted the other three.
Apparently the Hard Rock Hotel, we had a caller last week, it's stunningly comfortable and stunningly high-end. But anyway, and there's no way when you find out, obviously you can make phone calls when you go to the hotel.
I've done all this.
Can you not ring your friends and say, would you deliver?
But the only person that I'd be allowed to bring up there is my sister.
And no, my but sister they, can, a, they, can they deliver what you need when you come back? Are you with me?
Yeah, but the thing is, you're bringing a person, just say, use my sister as an example. She's recovering from cancer. And they want me to bring my sister into a quarantine facility.
Yeah, but there's another way around. You can get, I'm asking, I don't know the answer. I was suggesting last week, could people post stuff to you in the hotel?
So I have to order my stuff from a company that actually comes from England.
Okay.
It takes 3 to 5 days to get it delivered.
And have you got
now,
it?
I would have done that.
Okay.
And left that in my care or left that in the hotel. Okay. But I was told I couldn't.
Then they told me
I could do that when I arrived, but it takes 3 to 5 days for that to be delivered.
But have you got that anyway?
No.
Well, should you not order that anyway? Well, at least have it in Dublin somewhere.
I will get a certain amount of stuff come back from Turkey. They'll not be doing me for 14 days coming back from Turkey.
Okay. I'm so sorry you're in this position, Florence. I really am. And I'm so sorry that you're in the position. But as you say, you're not the only one by a long shot
needing a
gastric sleeve. I really hope it works for you. I've
notified, I've notified the HSA, I've notified the Department of Foreign Affairs.
And it doesn't.
I was on to the Commissioner of Assistance yesterday. I was on to the Department of Health numerous times. And all I keep getting told is, we don't know how to answer your question.
Yeah.
It was actually the fellow of Commissioner of Assistance says it wouldn't be a bad idea to contact yourself.
Who suggested it to us?
The Commissioner of Assistance, one of his people on the phone I was speaking to yesterday.
Well, it doesn't,
to put it out there.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem a very onerous demand. Like what you're saying is, I'm not going to eat the food that you're cooking, nothing to do with the food, but my diet because of the operation.
I have a doctor's letter stating that I have to have a liquid diet suitable to my diabetes plus from the, I have a letter to state this from my own GP.
Well, Florence, will you
and from Turkey.
Well, then will you keep in touch with us?
I will, yeah.
And when you, I don't know anything about Turkey. I read a Biog of Erdogan recently.
It's not even the issue of quarantine.
It's not a nice country. There's more journalists in prison in Turkey than any other country in the world. But anyway, and lots of human rights abuses. But that's neither here nor there for what you're doing. Please contact us when you come back. I hope it goes well for you in the circumstances.
And
I can see from the screen we're nearly out of time, but a lot of people think you're being very reasonable.
Yeah.
I think you've been very reasonable. Okay, Florence, mind yourself, won't you, please?
I will.
Especially after the operation, because you will have stitches, I presume.
I'll have stitches and staples.
Well, then would you be really careful lifting stuff?
But that's why I'm bringing my partner, I don't have to lift anything.
Okay.
That's why my doctor has advised me to do so.
And get all the help going through. Well, they are going through airports and all that, carry on.
Yeah.
Okay, Florence.
I have to say, the airport in Turkey is actually have arranged a wheelchair for me.
Yeah, good stuff. Rightly so. Yeah. Okay, Florence Lindsay, mind yourself, Florence, and I hope everything goes well. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, on the issue of people who are written out of our, as Shay said earlier, our tortured history, the first call was from Barry Kelly, who wants, he wants a memorial to Judith Cook. Ask yourself, go on, who was Judith Cook? She was murdered here in Dublin, about 6 miles from where I'm sitting. She was blown to bits in July 1976, 45 years ago, because she happened to be sitting beside in a car the British ambassador to Ireland, Ewart Biggs, who was also murdered on that day. No memorial, no plaque. And then that raised the issue. It's 105 years this weekend since the Easter Rising. No memorial to the civilians killed in the Easter Rising. Pat, of which there was an awful over nearly 300 of them. Pat Johnson. Pat, good afternoon. Another woman written out of history. Who is that?
Hi, Joe. Well, I'm actually, we have two women in the west of Ireland here who were very prominent in the 1916 Rising, but yet got written out of history.
Okay.
The first would be Julia Mary Morrissey, who was from Athenry.
Okay.
She was the leader of Cumannamon in Athenry in 1916, and of course Athenry was one of the few places that came.
That rose up.
Yeah. And as Liam Mellows said, we held 600 square miles of Ireland free from Britain for a week.
And Liam Mellows, who was the rebel leader around Galway in that part of the country, which was there was an attempt in Wexford, but apart from Dublin, Galway, and it was an attempt by the Kent brothers including Ashbourne in Dublin in this case. But and when did Julia Morrissey die?
Well, she died in the 70s. What happened, Julia, was that her brother had to go to America after the Rising. Her parents were dead. She was on her own.
Okay. And have you found her grave, Pat?
We did find her grave in Athenry.
Okay. Okay. But, well done. I'm over time. And Liam Mellows, you're right. Liam Mellows is commemorated by a beautiful memorial where he's buried in Castletown there near Goree in County Wexford beside the last church in the Dublin Diocese in Castletown. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Rebecca Meehan producing. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.